You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5, brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight, download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app, and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Is it time for Bulls coach Jim Boylan to instruct Lauri Markkanen to stop taking three-pointers? If he's not going to make one, doesn't he have to stop shooting at some point?
It is ridiculous. Lauri is below, I mean, he is, half his shots this year, more than half his shots have been from three-point land. And he is not hitting that shot, period, end of story. And, you know, we're going to talk to Casey Johnson at 640. When he's interviewing him after the game, Lauri almost looks like embarrassed, but kind of like smirky embarrassed about the whole thing. It's just so bizarre that this is his role on this team, that they can't somehow figure out a way to get him a mid-range jumper or a shot he can hit, something like that. But to have more than half your shots from three-point land and to fail to be able to make three-pointers on a consistent basis is hurting your team a lot more than it's helping your team. But I don't understand why they keep doing it. And I don't understand why they keep feeding him the ball for that shot. He's not hitting it.
You know, I think we talk a lot in this town about how schemes and game plans and approaches affect talent and athletes, and, you know, the Mitch Trubisky, Matt Nagy relationship and everything about how, you know, Nagy's unwillingness to make the most of his talent or get the most out of Trubisky, and it's sort of a mismatch. The same can be said for the Bulls and Jim Boylan and Lauri Markkanen, because this is not the same player we saw in the first two seasons. This is not the guy who is being coached in a way that's getting the most out of that talent. And that talent, after two seasons, I think everyone sort of concluded or was led to believe or assumed on an arc that was going to be an all-star arc, and you were going to have a player that when he hit his ceiling, he was going to be one of the top players in the Eastern Conference. That is the opposite of what's happening this season. This is a regression. It's a troubling regression if you're the Bulls, because they needed two things to happen this year. One was Zach LaVine to take a step forward, and the other was Lauri Markkanen. One of those things is happening. Lauri Markkanen is lost. Part of that is him. Part of it's coaching. That's on Jim Boylan. And I look at, you know, if we're going to hold coaches responsible for getting the most out of their talent, this is a failure by Jim Boylan, the latest one. And I think that he has to take some responsibility as well for knowing what your player is and what he isn't. Lauri Markkanen, you're right, he's awkward when he talks. His personality is more passive. We've talked about that. He's got to figure out what he does well, and they've got to accentuate it and emphasize it and get the most out of it, because that's just not happening.
We're beyond the halfway mark of the season. You're not going to shoot your way out of it, nope. Right? That seems to be, well, just keep taking those shots. Oh, it's Lauri.
You're 7 feet tall. Find some space down low. I know analytics don't favor the mid-range game, and you want to hit threes, and all of that is true and still accepted, but you're not hitting shots. Why would you take them?
Lauri Markkanen is only 22 years old, so you would think, logically, that he would be getting better at age 22, 23, 24, and he would start to kind of, you know, develop his game, know what works for him, and start to excel at certain things. But he has regressed so much since his rookie year, really. You know, he's had some injuries, kind of start-stop stuff going on. But I think the best we saw from Lauri Markkanen was him as a rookie. It was when Fred Hoiberg was the coach. And we're not going back too far here, because Fred was dismissed in December of 2018, so just over a year ago.
Oh, my God, that's hard to believe. Doesn't it seem a lot longer?
A lot longer.
Every day with Jim Boylan is an eternity.
It feels like a decade.
When Jim Boylan is the head coach, all time stops and collapses on itself, and bad basketball just reigns supreme in every era of the multiverse. And I'm not sure if this is just some horrific simulation or if this is actually the Chicago Bulls in the state of 2020, but this is what the offense is supposed to look like. Of course, it's not going to look good when the players aren't hitting their shots, but you're supposed to coach to the player's strengths. You're not just supposed to feed all this stuff into a computer and see what gives you the highest statistical chance to hit as many three-pointers as possible. Because if you don't have the personnel for it, then it's just idiotic and it doesn't make sense. You have to adjust to that as a coach and as a coaching staff. This is a good story that just came out a couple weeks ago. This was in The Athletic. They told Coby White, you know, he was a kid who at North Carolina took a lot of mid-range jumpers. You know, that was kind of his game. He perfected that shot. And they told him, don't do that here in the NBA. We don't ever want you to take mid-range jumpers, even though that's something you feel comfortable with. It's something that you're good at. We don't want you to do it. So what they're trying to do here, I think, is instill a system. And really, they're trying to adhere to this modern NBA, but they don't have the players to be able to do it. And that's when you have to adjust as a coach. And I just don't think that this staff and Jim Boylan are capable of changing or adjusting or really doing anything worthwhile.
Well, as you guys pointed out, Casey Johnson will be joining you at 6:40. And I love the headline on the NBC Sports Chicago website for his piece on Lauri Markkanen. The Lauri Markkanen problem is bigger than math. Yes, it truly is. 53% of Markkanen's attempts this season have been three-pointers, according to KC. That is insane for a guy who is struggling the way he is behind the three-point line. For the second time in three games yesterday, he didn't score in the second half. 7 of his 11 attempts came from three-point range yesterday. If you can't hit a three, you should try other ways of scoring. Markkanen is a big dude. Part of the other problem this season is his complete and utter lack of aggressiveness. He needs to start hitting from close range. He needs to get some confidence going, make some shots a little closer to the paint. Maybe, you know, he gained some weight this year. He bulked up. Maybe get a little get down in the post, do a little more in the post. I mean, what did you put on this weight for if you're not going to use it to be aggressive? So I think, yes, the answer is dump the three-pointers for now. Forget about the three-pointers for now. Try to get something going on the inside, a little closer from the perimeter.
I think he put on the weight to make sure that he didn't shoot air balls when he was shooting the three-pointers. He made sure he had enough in the backside to get the ball all the way there. I've been watching this guy. I paid attention to him in Arizona. He was on an Arizona team that should have been a Final Four team, and he was the typical Euro trash. Somebody's been blowing hot air up his backside for so long because he's so tall and he's got all the measurable. You know, Kevin pointed out he's 22 or 23. He not only should he be getting better, he should be in the prime of it right now. The NBA isn't a 30-year-old game. Okay, he should be in the prime of it.
But
this
all
isn't
that
about
stuff
learning
you say,
the NBA game. They don't play with their backs to the basket anymore.
Yeah, but
that doesn't happen anymore.
The Arizona stuff is totally disqualified because of his rookie year. When at the end of his rookie year, he was as good of a player in that rookie class. He could have been the third best player in that rookie class after his rookie year.
Okay, third best, and he was drafted what?
Seventh.
Okay, well that's about where he should be, right, David?
He's from Finland. That hardly qualifies as Euro trash.
Did I miss that?
No, it's
going to some German
exactly,
discotheque.
Exactly.
Well, I think he probably spent time in the discotheque. The AAU circuit
from
is
Finland.
Over in Europe. Okay, I'm sure he was the king of that, and that's what happens. Okay, he's been getting his rear end padded for so long because he had all the measurables and all the ceiling was through the roof.
By the way, in the 2017 draft, the first player taken, Markelle Fultz, who's had a rocky start to his career.
Right.
He's finally starting to come good in Orlando. But then Lonzo Ball after that, Josh Jackson was the fourth pick. I mean, you would still take Markkanen over some of these guys that were drafted. I mean, I'm not willing to write him off. At age 22,
me either.
He's too talented, and he's shown it before.
It's about getting the most out of him. That's
exactly.
What we're talking about.
It's about getting the right coach to get the most out of him.
Well, what is that? I mean, the question is
all-star
not
level.
This.
All-star level.
Not this.
He's an all-star.
This is abhorrent.
But doing what, David? He wants to shoot threes. Because on the four-letter network and on NBA TV, that's what they show. You know what they show? They show guys shooting threes. They don't show guys hitting 15-foot from the corner of the key.
It works when you have Steph Curry or James Harden or Klay Thompson or actual good three-point shooters. You can't just take this group of players on the Bulls and say, okay, we're going to play this style.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't work.
Right.
They're not that sort of players. You can't just instill that into them because that is the trend.
I don't know that this is on Boylan.
Everything's on Boylan. He sucks.
Well, I'm not going to argue that.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
Does Paul Konerko deserve to be part of the Baseball Hall of Fame class announced tonight? Who will be the most debated member of the new class?
Well, Paul Konerko is probably my favorite White Sox player that I covered. I have a ton of respect for him. I always liked being around him, what he had to say, how he approached his job. There's not a White Sox player I can think of being around in the last 15, 18 years that...
Burley?
Well, I liked Mark Burley, but I liked Paul Konerko probably. If you had to ask me to pick one of them, I would pick Paul Konerko. That said, I don't think that he's going to make the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure his credentials merit consideration this year. It's his first year on the ballot. I did not vote for him. He's got a, you know, the people that look at the WAR and measure that and all the analytics, which were affected by his last couple seasons, which weren't very good, but he's, you know, it's 27.7 WAR. He's got 439 career home runs in 18 seasons. There'll be other people that are more qualified. I don't think this is the year that Paul Konerko gets in. I'm not sure if he does get in eventually over time. The most debated person tonight, certainly you're going to hear a lot of the talk about Bonds and Clemens and the PED argument, and we can get into that later. I'll talk about my ballot later, and we'll get into all that. But I think the one guy who will get in that'll be debated whether or not he belongs or not will be Larry Walker. His longevity will be argued. I think it's his last year on the ballot. He's got a lot of things in his favor. The Coors Field thing has been used against him, like it's been his PED issue. But I think Larry Walker gets into this class, and I think he deserves to be in this class.
You know, I don't like the idea that a guy gets into a class because it's his last chance at it. I mean, if he wasn't worthy enough of the Hall of Fame up till now, then let the veteran committee settle it. Let them sort it out. So I that kind of drives me a little bit batty that, you know, well, he's got to wait. Oh, you know what? Now it's really time because he can't wait any longer. Come on. It just seems crazy to me. Yeah, I think Bonds will be the guy that is the most debated. I love Paul Konerko. He is in the Hall of Very Good. He is not in the Hall of Fame. You know, there are certain guys. Like, I mean, you know, even people arguing about Derek Jeter's defensive metrics and all that stuff. We heard that yesterday. Look, I mean, Derek Jeter, Hall of Fame? Yes. Period. End of story. It's not that hard. So I think Bonds is the whole PED guys. There will be more debate on that, and I think that with good reason there will be debate on that. And but I do think that Paulie's great as he was as a White Sox, and how much I loved him as a player. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
No, of course he's not a Hall of Famer, and that doesn't diminish anything that he accomplished, which was a whole lot. During his time here with the White Sox, being an integral part of their first championship in 86 years, I think it was at the time, all of the great moments he had in that playoff run, you know, the Grand Slam versus the Astros in the World Series, and just all season long, he was just completely, you know, their best offensive player. And not only that year, but he was for a very long period of time. He's not going to get in the Hall of Fame. He shouldn't get in the Hall of Fame, but I think when you put it into perspective as a White Sox player, certainly one of the best I've ever seen, one of the most accomplished. He's got his number retired. You know, everybody, I mean, even I think, I don't want to speak for any Cub fans, I never would, but I think even Cub fans can respect Paul Konerko, and they like Paul Konerko. He's a hard guy to dislike.
Right.
And he had a fantastic career. That doesn't mean he's a Hall of Famer. Now, according to, or in regards to, the actual Hall of Fame class tonight, Jeter is going to go in. I have no problem with that. He won everything. He was Hall very good every year. I personally am on the side where I would put in Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, despite some of the other extracurricular things that were going on. Larry Walker, I think, is borderline. I wouldn't be upset if he got in, but the fact that he played in Montreal, he played in Colorado, I think some people might have some issues with that, but Larry Walker was a fantastic hitter, one of the best left-handed hitters I ever saw. I would not be upset about that. Curt Schilling, to me, great pitcher. Piece of trash, though. I would never want to see him in the Hall of Fame either.
Because of that?
Because of his politics?
I think there's a very huge difference between being a conservative and doing the things Kurt Schilling has done, as opposed, you know, endorsing journalists to be hung and, you
it's
know, sharing
slope,
racist and transphobic and just hateful crap on the internet. There's a you can have whatever politics you want, but when you're starting to share things like that and you have these crazy conspiracy theories and you're promoting violence, I think that's where you draw a line.
Well, but you're good with cheating.
Sure.
I enjoyed watching Paul Konerko play for the White Sox. I really did, but it's the Hall of Good for Konerko. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't think he'll make it, and I agree with Bonds and Roger Clemens being the most debated members, particularly Barry Bonds, because time is running out for his candidacy. But their link to PEDs is going to be what makes them the most debated members in this class, for sure.
If you're part of the non-PED group, there is only one person worthy of the Hall of Fame, in my opinion, and that's Derek Jeter. That's it. Now, again, if you put Derek Jeter on the San Diego Padres for his entire career, is Derek Jeter a Hall of Famer? He becomes borderline Hall of Fame because he probably doesn't win as much as he did. He's not on television as much as he was when he's not in pinstripes and not part.
You'd vote for one guy.
I would, but here's the, I don't know the rules. Like, do I have to vote for X number of guys?
No, you can vote for 10.
But do I have to have more than one?
I don't believe
so.
Do
I have to have at least one? You know, I don't know all the rules. But to me, I am a PED, I'm okay. I would put a little asterisk by it. But I think Bonds and Clemens deserve to be in a special wing with an asterisk by their name. But they were very, very good, and they were probably one for sure and the other probably Hall of Famers without the stuff. As far as Paul Konerko, I'll be the Cub fan. You can't be anti-Paul Konerko. One of the great hawkisms, right? You know, that's how you get a 16,000 square foot house in Scottsdale, Arizona.
A big house.
Great guy. He had a great World Series. He's in the Hall of Very, Very Good. He's a Chicago Sports Hall of Famer, but he is not a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. Now, again, if you put a certain guy in, Harold Baines, really nice guy. I'm not anti-Harold Baines, but Harold Baines, if you're putting Harold Baines in the Hall of Fame, then you could put him in the Hall of Fame, right? But if you look at his biggest comparison is like Fred McGriff. Fred McGriff's not a Hall of Famer.
Crime Dog.
Andres Galarraga is not a Hall of Famer. Jason Giambi is not a Hall of Famer. These are the guys that he compares with. They're not Hall of Famers. But my Hall of Fame is very, very small. It's not wide open like it is today.
It's basically you.
5'9" and under.
It's a tough one, sure, Bruce. It's a very fair question and obviously a ripe one.
Can you make a case to have Dallas Keuchel take the ball as the opening day starter for the White Sox? Has Lucas Giolito earned that?
Yeah, I think Lucas Giolito has earned it. But could I make a case? Yeah, I can make a case. I mean, you know, this is a guy that has been an ace on a different staff. I mean, this is a guy that you went out and managed to come here, is what you've wanted, to get some pitching in here. There's a guy that's supposedly, I'm not big on this, but good in the clubhouse, can teach guys how to take the ball and do their job. So, I mean, you could say if it was a career achievement type award that he should get the ball on opening day. He's the veteran star of the group, and he's the only one that has won a Cy Young, right? Didn't he win a Cy Young? I don't know. I think it's got to be Giolito because of what he did here and what he did last year, and you want to build on that. So I would have Gio as my number one guy, and then I would go to Dallas Keuchel. But I think you could make an argument if you wanted to make it happen that way.
The only reason you'd be making an argument, you'd be creating an issue that doesn't exist. Lucas Giolito earned his way to be the opening day starter for 2020. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You bring in a guy.
Is that earned already, though?
Yeah. I mean,
do you have to go through spring training and make sure everyone's healthy and everyone's...
It's very much an unofficial sort of ceremonial type of designation, the opening day starter for the following season, which I think is based on your success the previous season. Now, Dallas Keuchel comes to... you know, the White Sox to be their version of John Lester. I'd have to go back and see if John Lester started opening day in 2015 for the Cubs. but I don't think the Cubs had anybody in 2014 that was worthy.
Lester did, I believe, right?
But the Cubs 2014 staff did not include anybody who had the success that Lucas Giolito did for the White Sox last year, if you follow. So Lucas Giolito deserves that designation, whatever, you know, even if it's one of 162, and we overstate its significance, and we do all that thing, all that stuff that we, you know, exaggerate the importance of an opening day starter, still, if it possibly could mean something to a guy who has earned that designation, you give it to him. And Dallas Keuchel, you know, then he's the new guy. He's the new guy that you respect. He's going to command that respect, but I don't think he deserves to be the opening day starter. That, to me, is not a something that's open for discussion.
No, I cannot make a case to have Dallas Keuchel take the ball on opening day. I can't. Maybe somebody else can. I absolutely cannot. I will not. I refuse to do it. What Lucas Giolito accomplished last year was excellent, and I think it's, I can't really put a finger on exactly what to call it, but I think it's better for the White Sox to have a guy that came up, and I know they traded for him from Washington, but a guy they developed in their system and took him from a bum, essentially, to one of the best pitchers in the American League, a guy who is, you know, excellent in, behind a microphone as well as on the mound. He's a great citizen, a smart guy, and an incredible pitcher. And I think he's somebody that fans can really latch onto in every regard. So I think he should be the guy, the face of this pitching staff for hopefully a long time and many successful years.
I have to say no as well. I mean, Lucas Giolito is the ace of this staff. So he's earned it. Absolutely. And it's an amazing thing what he did last year. As you point out, Mully, what about spring training? The drop-off would have to be so severe. He would have to come into spring training looking like a wreck and looking like a different person for them not to give him the ball on opening day. So I say no to Keuchel as your opening day starter.
I mean, unless there's something written into the contract that we're unaware of, this would be the absolute biggest slap in the face of Luke. This is how you get... You know what's going on with Chris Bryant over on the north side right now? Okay, you want to lose Lucas Giolito? Start Dallas Keuchel opening day at 35th and Shields and watch him take his ball and go away when it's his turn to get out of here. Come on, this is asinine.
That's a great question, and it differs for every guy.
Pedro Strop is reportedly weighing offers from the Rangers, the Brewers, and the Marlins, but is also in touch with the Cubs. Is he required or unneeded, and do you want him back?
Well, he's needed. You want him back. I don't know if he's required. Certainly, he's not worth the $6 million you paid him last year because of the injuries, and he's been the most reliable reliever over time that you probably have seen in a Cub uniform in a long time. So he'd be welcome back. There's no question about it. You like him in the clubhouse. You like him in certain situations. You don't like him as your closer. You don't need him as your closer. You don't want him that way, in that role either. But when you look at the Cubs bullpen, of course you want him back. Who else is going to be pitching in the, you know, in the sixth, seventh innings? Steve Cishek is a White Sox player now. Brandon Kinsler, I think, is still unsigned, a guy who's out there. You don't have anybody in your system that you necessarily trust to fill those roles that are important roles that have yet to be filled. So if Pedro Strop is still interested in returning to the north side, you try to make a deal that is affordable, because as we know, everything is about being affordable with the Cubs and their payroll. So $6 million, too much for Pedro Strop, but try to make a deal that's something more affordable. Absolutely.
You know, you just don't want to keep losing guys, right? At some point, you want to be able to return some players in order to fill out your roster as much as anything else. So a lot of the bullpen guys are gone, right? So you got to be able to have some guys. If he's weighing offers from three other teams, number one, it probably means that the offers aren't as good as he wants, or he would have signed with one of them. But it also means that the Cubs might lose the guy. I don't know that he's required, but he's not unneeded. And I think you could find a spot for him.
I don't think I would bring him back. You know, you're already saddled with one mid-30s right-handed pitcher who gave up home runs for fun last year in Craig Kimbrell, and he's not going anywhere with that contract and the level of play. I don't think there's room for two of them in the bullpen. You don't bring home or bring back another guy like Strop who had a bad year just to fill out the numbers. I think they're going to be able to find guys. You know, you've got Kyle Ryan, you've got Brad Wick, you've got Rowan Wick, you've got Casey Sadler, who they just traded for from L.A.
Oh, Casey Sadler.
Dwayne... he had a hell of a lot better the year than Pedro Strop in 2019, David. I'll tell you that much. We've got Dwayne Underwood. They've got options, and I think you're going to be able to find better ones than an old, washed up Pedro Strop.
Well, I don't know what the options really are, Kevin. I mean, yeah, I know his 2019 wasn't great.
Thank you,
but
Ray.
But I think that's part of the issue.
Yeah.
And this is my what makes me a little nervous about this Cubs team as we get closer to the springtime is what have you done? I understand there's still some time here, but you haven't added anybody of significance.
Give me James Norwood in a tight spot over Pedro Strop.
Well, I agree with David. Don't make him the closer, but I don't know if you want to completely not bring him back. I mean, he is one of the best Cub relievers of all time in his seven seasons, and that's a fact.
I mean, if somebody out there wants to pay Pedro Strop north of $5 million, then go ahead and let them. Okay, then go ahead. Congratulate. I mean, he's made over $27 million in his career, and he's had like a huge increase, right? I mean, he went from $500,000 to $6.25 million very quickly. Okay, and that's what happens when you're an important part of a team that goes to NL championships and wins World Series. That World Series one, unfortunately, just one so far. If that's the case, fine. But if he wants to cut $2 million, bring him back. Not five or six.
And for the record, Casey Sadler is a nice pickup, but he doesn't preclude you from getting Pedro Strop too.
Pedro Strop.
A show of hands. I mean, I know we're on radio, but does anybody think that paying Pedro north of $5 million makes sense for this?
No,
okay, I don't think you have to.
You don't have
to. Question. I mean, what? But the Rangers, they got a new ballpark. Are they desperate? He's got some showmanship to him. I mean, what the Marlinas? What are the Florida Marlinas going to give this guy? gift cards to the Clevelander? I mean, what are you paying this guy in?
Ray, you're absolutely right. He is one of the best Cub relievers ever. And from 2013 to 2018, he was excellent, but he fell off a cliff real hard last year.
I hate to see it.
Him and Kimbrel, hand in hand, like Thelma and Louise.
This is sort of a trick question.
How many coaches in Chicago sports history would you rank above Joel Quenneville? And how do you think Quenneville's bosses will feel tonight when he's cheered wildly at the United Center?
I don't think his bosses will be angry or upset that he gets cheered. I think they'll understand that he's going to be cheered. I don't know. If you start talking about coaches in Chicago history, I don't know if anybody you would take over Joel other than maybe George Halas, if you count all those titles back in the day, which were really creating the team and all the rest of it, too, or Phil Jackson with six titles. And I'm not sure that one of us couldn't have won a title, no offense to Phil, with that group and with that particular player. I think about Billy Ray and Mike Keenan and guys that went through town that were great. I think he's the best we've seen with the Blackhawks and has achieved more than anybody with the Blackhawks. I don't think that's that difficult to come up with. But I do think that you'd probably start, thinking about the history of sports in this town. You'd have to talk about Halas and Phil Jackson ahead of Joel, but I think Joel's got a place definitely on the Mount Rushmore of Chicago coaches.
Absolutely. Only three men have, besides Quenneville, have won multiple championships in Chicago. Frank Chance and Halas and Jackson.
I never liked Chance. I thought he made too many blunders with the...
And he always pinch hit at the wrong times.
Does anyone remember Bunted
too much.
Frank?
So,
if Sports Talk Radio had been around then.
Oh, okay. Gosh. Joel Quenneville coming back tonight is a big moment for him. I hope his family enjoys it. I know the Blackhawks fans will, and his bosses should appreciate all that he did for this franchise, which was the NHL's franchise of the decade, and he was the coach of the decade. And I think that when you look at all that he did in the time when he was hired as a scout and he replaced Dennis Savard, and there was controversy and there were questions, and he always seemed to steady the ship, and he always seemed to be the right guy at the right moment, and his personality was perfect for this city, and his approach was great for that team as it grew, and these guys that grew up under him, and Kane and Taze talking yesterday, they just thought that things were never going to change. So tonight's going to be a trip down memory lane for a lot of Blackhawks fans, and they should enjoy it. and they will be Q's, not boos.
I think just, you know, numbers-wise, I have to go with Phil at number one. And you're right, Mully, a lot of guys maybe could have won with those rosters and with Michael Jordan in particular. You could say the same thing about the 85 Bears and Mike Ditka, though. So I'm not even going to put him anywhere near my list. I don't think Mike Ditka really had too much going on involved in that.
All right, that's enough.
Blasphemy!
So I'll say Ditka can go kick rocks. I'll put Phil number one, Joel right behind him, a very close second.
It's all about them championships. So
it's all about them politics for Kempo.
That's right.
Since when would I ever bring it up?
Never. Six titles for Phil Jackson and six for George Halas rank them ahead of Coach Q, and that's it. And then it's Coach Q right there, number three on the list of greatest of all time. And then what's going to happen tonight? It's going to be a very emotional night, but I don't think there's going to be any regret from the Blackhawks front office. A change needed to be made, whether you like Jeremy Colleton or not. It was time.
He is definitely part of my Mount Rushmore, which includes Ditka, Madden, and Phil Jackson and Coach Q. These are the guys that I watched, okay? These are guys that I had the blessing to be alive to see them do what they did. And I'll tell you what, honestly, this will even ruffle some more feathers. Based on talent and how it went down, Ozzie would be, if you could add a fifth, Ozzie would be there because that White Sox team wasn't all that great.
We could carve a fifth head in there.
And he did a fantastic job, and he handled things fantastically, took all the heat. What he did with Bobby Jenks, to get Bobby Jenks to be the guy, the closer on that team, okay, even though the starting pitching was great and went deep into a lot of games, he was a big factor, and he deserves credit for that. What I would love tonight is a Coach Q camera, okay? The Bulls are off tonight, right? So
mustache
NBC,
cam.
NBC Sports Chicago Plus, I want a Coach Q cam. I want to see him grabbing his stuff.
Combing his mustache.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want his foot up on the bench. I want his foot in the backside of some guy. I want a Coach Q. You know how ESPN, the 400 Network?
Q cam,
like,
yeah,
all
be great.
All those different
sponsor
channels
too.
I want a Coach Q cam tonight. Are you listening?
NBC Sports Plus is
right.
Just the Q cam.
That'd be
1742. 1742 on my cable operator.
That's great.
What channel's Marquee on your cable operator?
I don't know yet, but I kept AT&T so that I could get Marquee.
I don't have one. I have Comcast, so nothing.
But you can watch.
You
the
got
NFL
10
Network.
Days, right?
You can watch
or 9
the
days.
Network. I can't.
It's
these
true.
Are the trade-offs.
What will the cord cutters do?
312-644-6767.
Free on the radio.
It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.